I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone. Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, as well as its scholasticizing Gaza and so far less virulent attacks against freedom of speech and thought on American university campuses, Israel is too targeting the Palestinian culture, hunting down and killing its journalists, authors, and poets. Fascists have always feared artists and their ability to stir within our hearts aspirations for a more beautiful world, and they have always failed, and in their attempts revealed themselves and their vile philosophy to be the enemy of what's best about us and what's best about being alive. Terry Wolfwood is the director and co-founder of the Barnard Boker Center Foundation. She's served as local coordinator for the Victoria chapter of Women in Black for many years and has traveled numerous times to the refugee camps in Palestine and Western Sahara to bear witness to those suffering injustice and to bring the message of the people she meets there back to Canada. Terry is too a poet and author. Her articles have appeared at Briar Patch, Peace News, and Third World Resurgence, among other places. Her poetry can be found at the Foundation's site, bbcf.ca, and in her recently released second anthology, Passion and Commitment, published by Smoy Press. Terry Wolfwood and a life of passionate existence, love, art, and resistance. Next. Welcome back to the program, Terry.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm always happy to speak with you, of course, Terry. This book now...
Passion and Commitment. And it's available at Ivy's Bookstore. I had a book launch a few months ago, and it's available online. And I'd be happy to read my poetry to anybody who wants to listen to it, particularly because much of my poetry is about the search for truth, telling truth, inspiring hope, and bringing it a moment in history crystallized into words. And words are very powerful. And the oppressors and the fascists of this world fear words. And that's why they kill so many writers, is because words are very dangerous. And that's all we have. We don't have any tanks, we don't have any bombs, but we have words, and we should use them.
The poets in Palestine have been targeted, none more famously than Rifat al-Arir, but he's not by any means the only one, and not just poets, but writers of all kinds and intellectuals in all areas of thought. This is a classic form of ethnic cleansing, and what else can we call it but a genocide?
Yeah, well, it's a genocide of a culture, and this is very important. Because that's one of the things that writers and poets are needed for, is to carry their culture. And they may be refugees, they may be impoverished, their houses may be bombed, but they still carry our culture. And that's why they seek them out and destroy them. And this has been going on for a long time, of course. Most famously in the 1970s with Hassan Kanafani, who was killed in a car bomb in Beirut. And so it's been going on for years. And writers and poets in Palestine know that. And most famously, the latest death of Rifat al-Azir, already immortalized in the poem he wrote just before he died, If I Must Die. And I'd like to read that. If I must die, you must live to tell my story, to sell my things, to buy a piece of cloth and some strings, make it so that a child somewhere in Gaza, while looking heaven in the eye, awaiting his dad, who left ablaze and bid no one farewell, not even his flesh, not even himself. See the kite, my kite, you made, flying up above, and thinks for a moment, an angel is bringing back love. If I must die, let it bring hope, let it be a tale. And that poem has been all over the world recently in memory of this man. And that's one of the important things, is memory, to remember things.
Well, it's in all of the world, saving the Toronto Public Library, who pulled who pulled it, who was pressured to pull Rafat Alarir's words from display because it was complained about. And it was said that he was inciting terrorism and anti-Semitism.
Well, these are old slogans that they have been dragged out regularly, and we don't need to let them get to us. And I'm sorry that the library in Toronto would be so susceptible to such amounts of pressure. And maybe some people in Toronto will agitate to get those signs back up. But I know it happens. I've had posters torn down too in Victoria.
It seems to be in concert with a lot of suppression of thought and expression on this side of the water in support of an ongoing genocide. We're seeing it right now playing out on university campuses across the United States, some to a lesser extent here in Canada as well. It's easy for me to write out and to point fingers at such an obvious fascist regime as Israel's is currently. But they don't really survive without being propped up by us either.
No, and when we first were bombarded with the latest war in Gaza, because it's not the first one, I phoned a Palestinian in Jordan, and she was absolutely blunt. She said, "Terry, it's your fault." And by your fault, she means our country's fault. She said, "You supported this war." Well, we'll go right back to 1948, when Canada supported the formation of Israel, but not of Palestine, in the United Nations. And we have supported it ever since. And we have never criticized anything that's happened. And it brings back the memories of Guernica. And I wanted to mention that this month, April, is the 87th anniversary of the bombing of Guernica, when Franco asked his buddies, Hitler and Mussolini, to bomb a community in northern Spain, a Basque community, because it was a model of democracy, of community democracy. And he wanted to punish those people and make it an example. And he didn't have the planes. This was very early on in the use of planes in warfare. So they bombed Guernica one afternoon, and they killed a quarter of the people and destroyed much of the town. And that was the beginning, I think, of a major new kind of warfare, warfare from the sky. And we've been going on throughout, from Baghdad to Hiroshima, and now to Gaza, where war is being waged from the sky. And people are being killed, their physical environment is being destroyed, and the attempt is to destroy their culture. It's nothing new, and Canada supported this war just as we supported the war in Guernica. We were part of the non-interfering peoples. Canada did not speak out against the military uprising of Franco and his eventual success of the coup. And we have not spoken out properly against what Israel is doing. We're supporting them, of course. How else could a country that has less than 10 million people wage war at a sophisticated level and have nuclear weapons and have some of the most sophisticated armies in the world without our support? Can you imagine Eritrea or El Salvador, which are about the same size and have the same population, being having enough resources to do this? Well, Israel doesn't have them either. It's all from us and our buddies in NATO.
Well, when Guernica happened, there was outrage across the world, and most famously Pablo Picasso, the Spanish painter, created his masterpiece that still is a part of the United Nations, and other than being covered up from time to time when it's proved embarrassing. Have we been diminished, do you think, Terry, as a world community, to witnessing Gaza, Guernica-sized massacres and atrocity many times multiplied, and yet hardly raise a finger? Are we deadened?
No, we don't control the narrative until now. And I want to say that the world is changing. I mean, there's been an uprising all over the world about what Israel's doing, which amazes Israel. I think they're losing the control of the narrative. But we have been very much controlled by the narrative that they have, and their American publicity companies write for them. And it's not surprising. So I'm really surprised at the global uprising. There are so many problems in the world, from climate change to poverty to refugees leaving areas of war and famine. And yet people have, millions of people have spoken out against this war. I think they're very surprised and they're very scared. And people who are scared and surprised tend to be very desperate. I was looking back at some of the poems I've written and thinking that what was so important about what the last poem I read was. And I wrote a poem called I Saw Janine, which is in the West Bank. And it's an area, it's a refugee community. I saw Janine on a calm and bright morning to visit friends along a narrow alley between blocks of flats. Their cat jumped out in front of us to greet us, where old men sat drinking coffee. I saw rich colored carpets glowing in the sunlight. Later, friends said, they came yesterday, occupied that flat, locked the women in their room after demanding their money and jewelry. They took away several young men, urinating and worse on those carpets, hanging to dry after we cleaned them. I imagine soldiers with the Star of David on helmets surging up that narrow alley with machine guns, riot gear covering their stone eyes, dehumanized by the love of poverty. Life goes on in Janine. Last week, another surge of soldiers, shooting as they came, saw the word press. They knew immediately their target. Shireen died because she would not mask the truth, because she, like many, believed the truth known would bring justice. She made it her work, her life work, her calling. Ignored threats of danger, the woman, this gentle soul and a big smile. The sun shines again on Janine. Cats and old men relax. Reclaim their space for now. I saw Janine and lived to tell my story. Cherie did not, but her lives on in others, and the truth will set Palestine free. And what's important about my poem and the other one is that it's a passing on, an imperative that we carry on. When people die and people are silenced, we have a job to do. We have to carry on. And both these writers were talking about it, and they both died. But there are people carrying on, and there's still more people writing about it. There's still more people doing things about it. So that's, I think, one of the important messages. In Palestinian culture, the most esteemed quality that somebody can have in a character is samud. And samud is steadfastness, that you will be steadfast, that you will not waver, you'll not give up after a short time. You'll stay with it. And that is why we will create a world of justice, because we all must have samud. And we're reminded of this by another poet, another Palestinian poet who died a couple years ago, quite peacefully, actually. He lived in Egypt for a long time as an exile with his wife, and then he moved back to Jordan. And his name is Murad Barghouti, and he wrote many poems, but very few of them are translated into English. And this one is a rather ungentle reminder. It's called It's Also Fine. It's also fine to die at our beds, on a clean pillow and among our friends. It's fine to die once, our hands crossed on empty chests and pale skin. No scratches, no chains, no banners, no petitions. It's fine to have an undusty death. No holes in our shirts and with no evidence in our ribs. It's fine to die with a white pillow, not the pavement under our chests. Our hands resting, held by those of our loved ones, surrounded by desperate doctors and nurses, with nothing left but a gentle farewell, a grateful farewell, paying no attention to history, leaving this world as it is, hoping that someday, someone else will change it. And I need to read that poem because I remind our readers that we are the people. We are the change. That's where the change will come from. It's from us being steadfast and staying with the cause of justice. And so Murad Barghouti was reminding us in a moment of desperation that we had to remember this and not think about dying on a clean pillow and a clean chest. And the other message that the Palestinian poets have is the message for their occupiers, for their oppressors. And they speak to them, and they speak to them in poetry. This poem is called Here We Will Stay by Tafi Zayed. It's called Here We'll Stay. Here We'll Stay. We will remain in Ramallah, in Galilee, like a wall on your chest, your throat a shirt of glass, a cactus thorn, in your eyes a sandstorm. We shall remain a wall on your chest, clean dishes in your kitchens, take care of your children. But we shall stay, singing our songs, teaching the angry streets, fill prisons our dignity. Life in Ramallah, in the Galilee, we shall remain, and living trees ferment like yeast in dough, we shall remain. And that's part of a much longer poem by that man. It's just a warning to the oppressors and their allies that these people don't intend to go anywhere. Palestinians are going to stay, no matter what you do. And how many you could try to kill, even in Gaza now, with the genocide that's going on, there are people that plan to stay. And another warning is that they will protect their land. And the land of Palestine is really symbolized by the olive tree. It has an enormous religious and cultural and physical significance. It's their main form of economy. That Palestine exports very little, is not able to export a lot, but they do export olive oil, and they do produce olives and olive oil. And that's part of one of the reasons they can hang on, because the amount of aid that they get from us is just a few rice balls. Charity, not solidarity. In fact, some organizations, Palestinian organizations, refuse to accept aid. I know of one organization that was visited by the USAID, and they were told they had a lot of money left over, and it would be very helpful for them if they would accept the money. And the organization said no. And the American woman said, well, why? Well, we don't want your money. So they gave it to another organization involved in agriculture and planting. And no sooner had they given them the money than they demanded their list of supporters. And so the organization gave them their money back. So that's the difference between charity and solidarity. And charity is just a form of control. I have a poem here about what else has happened. And this is actually the death of a man I knew. He was a cabinet minister in the federal government of the West Bank. And it's called Death of an Olive Tree. It was in December, a good time to plant seedlings in a land where 2 million olive trees of every age from 2,000 years to 2 years old have been destroyed, stolen by relentless purveyor of death. When Ziad Abu Amin, 55 years old, father, Palestinian politician, joined farmers laden with small trees to plant on land others stole, and they were attacked, gassed. He was choked by army soldiers of global power. He died in the ambulance from Tumas, Aya, to Ramallah. The world blinked and looked away. No cabinet minister, no politician stood for a moment of silence in any parliament for their colleagues. No UN vote of censure. No government sanctioned this act. A lover of children and olives, mourned by his family and by the olive trees, died.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Terry Wolfwood. Terry is director and co-founder of the Barnard Volcker Center Foundation. She's served as a coordinator for the Victoria chapter of Women in Black for many years and traveled to Palestine and Western Sahara. We're talking today about her second book of collected poems published by Smallberry Press, released recently, Passion and Commitment. Terry's been reading selected pieces from her book and also from Palestinian poets as well. Terry, it's been a long road for you and your relationship with Palestine. And today, I find it difficult. I've been following this issue for a couple of decades too, and at least. And it's difficult to look at what's going on right now without seeing this as a trajectory into the ground. Although it's inspiring to see people still resisting, but I'm not sure what to make of it. What's your perception of what we're witnessing?
Well, when I was reading the end of this poem, I broke up, so I'm sorry I didn't finish it. Mourned by his family and friends. Not only has he died, but the olive tree that died with him. He would cherish this good man, this good Palestinian. And I can't believe that the world has, for 87 years or more, done nothing except increase and the power and the ability and the quantity of killing each other. Why are we killing each other? Is the question. And when we talk to ordinary people everywhere, they don't want that. They want people in Canada want health care. They want housing. They want human rights everywhere. And yet we have no leaders that will stand up for those. It's desperate. I can't sleep at night sometimes. And I know these people. And I think of the women that we helped in Gaza. We had a project of helping women produce food. I think of the women who are beekeepers, the women who are planting trees, the women who are raising chickens, the women who are fishing. And then I think of this poem. And this is a poem I wrote several years ago after a war in Gaza. After another war in Gaza, because we have to remember that this war of Gaza didn't just happen. It's context. And since 1948, we have been occupying illegally and supporting the occupation, illegal occupation of the country of Palestine. And this poem is in the voice of a child. And it was about 4 or 5 years ago, because we have to know that this war is not the only war that every 4 or 5 years, Israel bombs Gaza and starts another war so they can test their new weapons. And this is when I wrote this one. We are still here in Gaza. Last night, we went to the seashore. My father carried by my little brother. He's very sick. He cries a lot and hardly moves. Mother held the baby. My older brother and I carried blankets. They aren't heavy. We have nights, but we have cold nights in Gaza. We wear all our clothes and snuggle together. Our house has no walls or roof. We lie under the open sky. When we are hungry, Mother says, count stars, and we will until we fall asleep. We reach the beach slowly. The stones hurt my feet because my shoes have such big holes. I don't cry because Mother says, I am a big girl now. Little brother cried for all of us. Father hardly ever talks. He was up all night in the silence. The lights were blazing. We walked away under our blue skies. We joined others in a patch of pebbles. The sea so quiet, we could hear murmurs of hundreds of birds. We were told that ships were coming. And we could repair our home, and they had aid, and we could fix our house. We try every day, stones. Even I can carry small ones, but they don't stay together very well. We want to know we need help. Father had a job in the day, a little job. He used to be a teacher, but then the school was destroyed. His mom calling. I'm sorry. I keep thinking of these little girls who are Now, sleeping made me intense and never having a home to fix at all anymore. Father says, the ships do not come, so we buy a fish to cook for a fisherman for breakfast. Please tell all your friends we are still here in Gaza. And that's what we have to remember. Those people are still there in Gaza. There are still, many of them do not want to be refugees. They do not want to go anywhere. They want to be in Gaza, their home. And I don't know whether you've seen it, but somebody told me that they've seen real estate ads on the internet advertising waterfront property with condos in Gaza by an Israeli company. And that's what we have to stop. We have to give these people back their country. And how can we go to bed at night knowing that somewhere there's a woman having a cesarean without anesthetic? There's a man whose leg is cut shot off. There are children with diseases. There's water that's barely safe for anybody to drink. And that's what we've been living through since October and longer, way back. We need to remember that. And we need to have commitment as well as passion for the cause. And I'm really impressed with the fact that all over the world, in Victoria, in Cork, in Jordan, all kinds of places that you wouldn't think of, people are still demonstrating once a week. People are still collecting money. People are still trying to get aid. And people are still pressuring their government. I phone Trudeau every about once a month. He has a voicemail. And you can phone the voicemail and leave a message. And I leave a message telling him I want an alternative before the next election. I know the opposition doesn't offer us an alternative. Is Trudeau going to offer us an alternative that Canada will be a country that will support human rights in other countries? He says he will in some countries, but for some reason or other, he doesn't choose to do it in Palestine. But other countries, he says human rights are important. So let's remember that.
Well, Terry, we're fast running out of time, too fast in more ways than one. We've been talking today about Terry's newest collection, a book of poetry. It is Passion and Commitment. They are the poems that reflect her life's experience and values from childhood to recent times, from Canada to Palestine, from Africa to Central America to the UK. And they are poems of love and loss. You can find them. Where can people get your book, Terry? How can they get your book?
In Victoria, it's available at Ivy's. And if anybody from out of town wants it, they can contact the Canadian publisher, Yala Press in Victoria. And I think I gave you the address of it, so maybe people can contact you after the show.
I'll put a link in with the site. It's Yalla, Yalla Press.
Yalla means in Arabic, let's go, let's get going.
Yes, and it is time for that.
So my first book was Love and Resistance, and it was published in England at Smallberry Press. And it's still available online. And my second one, which was published last year, which some of these poems are in, most of these poems, my poems are in one of those two books. And the other poems are you can source from the Palestinian poets. My first book was called Love and Resistance. And the second one is called Passion and Commitment.
Well, and of this second book, Carolyn Pogue writes, beware the poems from Teresa Wolfwood. They will enter you and take you places you may never have been before. A bridge to the wild side, a bereaved mother's heart, a kitchen sink in Mexico, and so much more. Don't say you weren't warned. Thank you, Terry, for your long efforts and your literary contribution.
Thank you, Chris.
That's all I've got for this week. Until the next time. Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago. Jakarta. Helsinki.